From WGBH in Boston, you're listening to Ground Truth, human stories from the front lines.
I'm Charles Sennett, founder of the Ground Truth Project. This season, we're tracking the human consequences of climate change. Rising seas and surging tides pose a unique threat to many corners of the world, from vulnerable islands in the Pacific to new plans for development on Boston Harbor. On this journey along the rising tide, we're finding out that the plans to confront the threat of surging water can have consequences too. Reporter Chris Bentley went to Indonesia's capital, Jakarta, to investigate how even projects done in the name of defending the city's most vulnerable residents could actually leave them worse off.
I'm crawling through Jakarta's crazy traffic in a taxi, and it's raining torrentially. It's actually dry season right now, so this doesn't even come close to what it'll sound like when the monsoon comes. We're driving deeper into the city, where I'm hoping to find out how people live with some of the worst urban flooding on Earth. For centuries, Jakarta's been regularly flooded from two directions, the Java Sea to the north, and the 13 rivers that flow through the city from the south. Hundreds of thousands of homes are inundated by floods every year. On top of all that, the land itself is actually sinking because people are extracting too much water from the ground. As sea levels rise and storms get worse, Jakarta's 10 million people could be underwater, and soon. So the government is taking some pretty drastic steps to keep that from happening. For one thing, it's taken on the enormous job of widening and dredging the rivers to hold more stormwater. To do that, the government is evicting tens of thousands of mostly poor people from neighborhoods along the rivers. I came here to find out what that's like. When you're stuck between epic floods and the threat of eviction, what do you do? I'm on the ocean side of the city now, in a part of town called Pasar Ikan, which means fish market. The fishing boats are still here, in the polluted canals on either side of this peninsula, but the homes are gone. This neighborhood was bulldozed 5 months ago. Now, it's a field of rubble. But there are still people here. My interpreter Deonti Widyawati and I walk up to a young guy who's standing in flip-flops on a pile of rubble and trash next to a tent.
What's your name?
Oh, Imam Musafi.
Imam?
Imam.
Were you evicted?
Yeah.
Oh, you were.
Imam Musafi's tent marks the spot where his family's house used to stand before the eviction.
Kurang komunikasi ataupun kurang sosialisasi dari.
The notice coming from the government only came 2 days before the day of the evictions for him.
A two-day eviction notice. He says there was no time to plan. He lost his home and his business, too. He'd been making a living by selling cell phone credits and accessories on the street. The bulldozers destroyed some of his merchandise, but the bigger loss was his customers. Before Imam's neighborhood was demolished, it was one of Jakarta's many kampung. Sometimes people take that to mean slums, because most of the residents built their homes without permits on land they don't own. But the word kampung actually means village. They're little communities with local leaders, economies, and a heritage going back generations. Millions of Jakartans live in neighborhoods like this, along unpaved paths, bustling with people selling food and other necessities. The government tolerated these informal villages for years. But now, under the premise of flood control, they're clamping down. It's not just about widening rivers and building flood barriers. It's also about what the government calls revitalization. These villages are becoming hotels, malls, parks, and new office blocks. The old Jakarta is being demolished to make room for the new Jakarta. Imam Musafi is not part of that new Jakarta, but he's not going quietly. The neighborhood is suing the government over the evictions. The government offered housing to all 400 families in the neighborhood in new high-rise public housing projects, but most turned it down. Instead, they moved onto fishing boats, or moved in with relatives or friends, or into a tent, like Imam. So what's so bad about moving to a brand new apartment? To answer that question, I'm at a housing project called Rusun Jatinegara, the cluster of 8 boxy concrete high-rises tower over Jakarta's main river, the Chiliwung. The riverbank here has been reinforced with concrete to help control flooding. I meet up with another interpreter named Gabby Patina Serane. We walk through a gateway into a courtyard where vendors are tending food stalls and carts, and kids are running around buying street snacks like fried bananas. We meet a woman, a vendor, wearing a chestnut-colored hijab and a pink floral dress. What's your name?
Siapa nama ibu?
Siapa nama? Safitriani.
Safitriani.
She says she's 59 years old and shares 2 small apartments here with 9 other family members. She and her brother, a barrel-chested guy wearing shorts and a t-shirt, are standing next to her stall where she sells packages of chips and nuts. Safitriani says they moved here a year ago after being evicted from her kampung.
Di Pulo. Kampung Pulo.
Kampung Pulo.
I'd heard about the evictions in Kampung Pulo. Thousands of police poured into the neighborhood to evict more than 900 families, firing tear gas and water cannons at protesters. 12 people were injured, and dozens more were arrested.
What time was it? Can you take me back to that day?
Okay. Yeah. Jam berapa ibu keluarnya?
Ya, kira-kira jam 9 lah. Meko tuh udah depan mata sendiri.
So the bulldozer already like in front of her house, so she have to go out like within an hour. Like they just waiting there, so she have no choice. Ibu keluar terus ibu kemana? Where do you go?
Berdiri di depan rumah, saya nangis berteriak-teriak.
She just stand in front of her house and then cry.
Yeah, okay, saya permintaan saya ya, pas semua dirobohkan itu.
She cannot accept that fact that her house has been demolished, and she asked like the man who demolished her house to just like kill her with her house. Like she cannot accept it.
In case you couldn't make that out, she's saying she wishes the bulldozers had killed her. She goes on to tell us that she cleaned houses in Malaysia for 15 years to afford that house. She owned it 25 years, raising her 4 kids there after her husband died. She's furious that the government just took her land. Like many people evicted from Kampung Pulo, Safitriani says she owned her land legally and paid taxes on it.
You paid taxes?
Yeah, ibu bayar pajak.
Bayar pajak.
She paid for taxes.
Did you pay rent?
Or no.
For utilities? Or
it's no billed rent. To her.
Right. But paid for the land and then paid the taxes. And
yes.
Then they still evicted you with no recourse.
Yeah.
A year later, she's still fighting the government to get compensation for her demolished house. And it costs her more to live here in an apartment than it did in her house. After government subsidies, the rent is about $25 a month, plus utilities. That may not sound like a lot, but it's almost as much as many people here make in a month. And Safitriani says it's a lot harder to make money here. She doesn't have as many customers.
So it's really hard because there are not so many people here, and her house at Kampung Pulo is like in di depan jalan ya, Bu.
Yeah.
In front of the road, so the customer is more there. Meanwhile here, like it's only like people from this neighborhood. So yeah, she got like less money.
Safitriani agrees to let us see her apartment. She asks her brother to watch her cart and takes us to the elevator.
2 bulan saya nangis terus di sini tuh, lihat rumah, kelihatan juga rumah, nangis.
She's crying like for like nonstop for 2 months to like reminiscing her old house. Lantai berapa ibu?
16.
Okay, 16th floor.
Yeah.
We get out on the 16th floor and walk down a dim hallway and find her unit. We step into a small, windowless room that doubles as the living room and the kitchen.
Can you show us around your apartment?
A small TV set is on the floor next to a mini fridge. Safitriani's drying rack is also on the floor, full of dishes, next to a child's sleeping mat decorated with blue cartoon bunnies.
She and her 2 grandchildren sleep outside.
In the hallways or where?
Yeah, here, right?
Oh, in the main room.
Yeah,
by the sink.
Safitriani shows us around politely, but she looks tired. She says the apartment leaks when it rains.
Emang capek di sini, lebih kalau hujan di sini masuk, di luar tuh masuk kayak pulau jadinya tuh.
So if it's raining, like the water will come from here and also through the hallway. So it will be like basah ya di mana-mana.
Basah.
It will be wet like everywhere.
Wow. And this is a new building.
Yes. She said that it was better like back in her old house, like even though it's flooding as well, but it's her own house and it's not that like bad the effect when it was raining, but here it's she cannot do anything.
So you used to get floods back where you were, and that was part of the reason that they evicted the neighborhood was flooding, and then even 16 stories up, yeah, you still have to deal with water on the ground.
Yeah, jadi dia bilang kayak ibu kan dipindahin ke sini karena untuk banjir kan, tapi di sini pun masih.
We thank Sophie Triani and head back downstairs. Sophie Triani's got a roof over her head, which is better than a tent. But it's pretty clear her life has gotten worse since the eviction. I need to hear from someone in the government. The Jakarta governor's office doesn't respond to my requests for an interview, but I am able to talk to Indonesia's director of climate change adaptation.
My name is Sri Tantri Arundhati.
Sri is a local. She grew up in Jakarta. She says the evictions are justified, because by Indonesian law, no one's supposed to build right on the riverbank. And while Sophie Triani may have paid taxes, most Kampung residents don't.
Actually, the people, they are not legal live there because it's a government land. So removing them and then give them proper, housing. Yeah. I think it's better. It's better for their health.
Eviction may be a painful process, but Sri argues residents are better off in the long run if they aren't constantly flooded. Some of them are living in dangerous conditions, in homes built on top of one another with rickety construction. And many Kampung residents use Jakarta's rivers as a landfill or a toilet.
I don't know why they don't satisfy, because I think it's more better to live in the healthy housing. Yeah.
So the government says these evictions are not only necessary to help with flood control, it's better for the residents too. But a local journalist named Evi Mariani doesn't buy it. Sure, flood control is badly needed, but it's also a convenient excuse to sanitize Jakarta, to make it more upscale and touristy, like Singapore, she says. Clean up the slums, the garbage, the rivers, hide poor people away in high-rises.
They're just being called, like, illegals and dirty, the great unwash of Jakarta.
Evi says there's no question that developers have more clout with the government than Kampung dwellers. So Jakarta's poor end up paying the price.
Last year alone, more than 8,000 families are evicted. Most of the families become poorer after the evictions. The government will always call it relocation, which is a pretty word, but not really. It's forced fiction. So they just move to the social housing, which is designed not taking into account their needs, and they got harder life there.
Evi doesn't doubt the need for flood control projects, but she says it's the way the government is going about it, bulldozing whole neighborhoods on short notice with no discussion.
I mean, if you need to dredge or something and you need to relocate people, that's okay. I mean, talk to them and plan new housing with them.
Jakarta needs more affordable housing, but developers aren't building it just to be nice. This is their business, and they're making money from it. In fact, pretty much all of Jakarta's public projects to control flooding involve private developers. Let's put aside the river widening and evictions for a minute to look at plans for another project involving developers in an even bigger way, to help protect the city from rising seas. Jakarta's considering a $30 billion plan to build a giant seawall out of a chain of man-made islands. The government would pay for the whole project by leasing the new islands to wealthy developers to build luxury condos and malls.
But indeed, yeah, this does create the image that this is a project for the rich.
That's Dutch engineer Victor Konen.
Unfortunately, they're the only ones who can finance this kind of schemes. If you don't want to do it with this kind of high-end developments, then you have to finance with public money, and public money is scarce in Indonesia.
I'm talking with Victor next to a leaky concrete seawall, the only thing holding back the Java Sea from flooding almost half of the city. This is a poor neighborhood, like the Riverside Kampung I visited earlier, where people live under asbestos roofs and make a meager living by fishing or selling snacks on the street. Victor is managing a project to shore up this seawall. Millions of people could be displaced if it breaks. Rich people in the area already know this. That's why they have their own seawalls. But poor people have to rely on the government for protection. So Victor says promising wealthy developers a payday may be the only way to pay for public flood control projects.
Look around. I mean, if you are able to protect this area, then you're protecting 100,000 people of a very poor community. You look around. I mean, these are not rich people. And if you want to develop this with limited public funds, you have to look at more high-end developers.
Jakarta's dealing with an extreme level of flooding. But Conan says there's something other coastal cities could learn from it.
I think the lesson learned here is that if you don't act in time, then you are forced to take these mega engineering solutions. Jakarta managed to get into a situation where small scale or building with nature is not an option anymore. So the lesson for other cities is act while you still can, and then you can avoid these mega engineering solutions.
There's an attractive optimism to the notion that cities around the world can build their way out of flooding and sea level rise. Maybe it's even true in theory from an engineering standpoint. But look at the river evictions, which are happening right now. These extreme measures to adapt may be as damaging and disruptive as climate change itself. 8,000 families were evicted last year, and tens of thousands more are bracing for evictions that could come any day.
That was Ground Truth reporting fellow Chris Bentley. This episode of Ground Truth was produced by Rachel Rohr, Nathan Toby, and Marissa Miley. Sound design by Robert Anderson. Special thanks to Tom Devlin, Phil Rado, Gary Mott, and Bob Kempf at WGBH. I'm Charles Sennett, the executive editor. Join us next time on Ground Truth.